Mr. Morgan, thank you. Good morning. Welcome to the Josephine County Board of County Commissioners. It is 11 a.m. for general discussion in the BCC boardroom. Present are Commissioner DeYoung, Commissioner Morgan, and Commissioner Hare. Item one is live stream options to the floral building at the fairgrounds. John McCafferty is present. What do you think?
Well, good morning, Commissioners. I just wanted to touch base with you on what you were thinking for the streaming for next week. We do have internet now at the floral building. We took off a wireless access point off of the old admin building and put it on the floral building. The admin building doesn't need it anymore because we directly fiber connected them to the network.
So will that remain now from now on?
If we wanted to, yeah. We'd like to get a more permanent solution for the fairgrounds because several buildings probably would take advantage of internet, especially during the fair. But that's one step one.
Okay.
So we have internet. We can stream it if that's what you'd like us to do. I think there is value in having someone else do the streaming just from the standpoint that it's secondary to our natures, not primary. And to see what someone could do with it from a professional standpoint, it's not a bad idea to see where we could improve what we do. But we can put the projector up. We've got the new projectors for Ambassador, so we just use one of those. Its quality should be pretty good. Use a tripod camera. We're thinking only one microphone because it'd only be one speaker at a time, so we could put that right into the floral building sound system and record it onto the stream. It'd be a first for us, though, to stream live in a remote location. So we're going over there this afternoon to take a look at it.
Why don't we have that contractor do it and you guys partner in this first effort?
That's fine,
and
too.
Then we learn, because I think they do it quite regularly from just about anywhere. That would be my suggestion.
Do we have a contractor got for that in mind?
It's the same people that are doing our promotion, which has been quite, I'm sure you've seen it, quite robust.
Feedback.
It's all over. In a matter of 9 hours, it was just everywhere. So I feel pretty good about that.
Good.
And this is something they do, so I can put you guys together. Nova Visuals, I think, is what it is, with Moving Mountains, that partnership. So it's, I think the benefit, Commissioner Morgan could probably speak to this more than I can because I'm not really sure, but I know that there's a higher threshold when you're live streaming some element on Facebook. It kicks you into a different realm or group of potential viewers. Archived video is not, it's not as out there, so.
No, live stream's where it's at.
Okay.
So that's what we want to go.
And we're doing it on Facebook? On our Facebook page?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'll let them figure that
out. Okay.
So
if they need access to the Josephine County Community Channel, we can do that on YouTube.
Okay.
So if they can coordinate with us,
yeah,
that'd be great.
I'll get that information to you.
That's awesome.
In Commissioner Morgan's wheelhouse.
Ideally.
He started it.
What I'd like for long term is the internet in the commercial building, the pavilion in the floral building. That's
mm-hmm.
the first place to be. And permanent, accessible. And I thought we would work with Charter or somebody to provide.
CenturyLink has a very weak wireless freebie. We have none of the information on that.
Okay.
So it was thrown up.
Yeah.
And it won't do live streaming.
Okay. All right.
Okay, I've got my orders. Questions? Thank you.
Jay.
Did you survive last week, by the way?
It was a tough week.
Yeah.
But we're good. We're back on it.
Thank you for your service.
Next
he had
up.
Jury duty last week.
Oh, so, yeah.
And he had a 5-day trial.
He kept whistling hang 'em high as he was going down the hallway here. Item number two is BLM update. Burkhard and Boltschweiler, if I don't.
Yes.
Did I do good? Did I do okay?
Yes.
All right.
I guess so. Good morning, everybody.
Come up
good
and
morning.
Have a seat. How are you,
Ben?
Very well. How are you all?
Great.
Good.
Good.
How are you, sir?
Pretty good. How are
good.
You?
We
brought swords.
Swords.
Wallpaper.
Wallpaper? Yeah, something like that.
So Alan today is going to talk about several of the projects we have on tap for this year. Specifically, we'll be breaking down the Pickett West project, which I know you all hear quite a bit about, and then we've got some updates for you on Title II funds and some other projects that we have going on.
The Gates was referenced again on our morning talk show on KJO. And it is pretty regularly. We've been working on a project, you've been working on a project, Alan,
right.
some 3 years ago, of digitizing, getting a map
mm-hmm.
that would be
Gates, yeah.
interactive as far as, or in addition to like having, I've seen on some gates there's a sticker or a placard that that you drive up to and it says this gate is, you know, closed for a particular the cedar
mm-hmm.
issue, or there isn't any public access necessary because, you know, after the first 100 feet of BLM it's private land.
Right. So getting the communication on the gate
yes.
as to why
both
would also be okay.
would be ideal.
Yeah.
Entering private land or something of that sort.
A lot of people don't have access to internet, especially out in the field, wanting
mm-hmm.
to know why
sure.
it's closed.
Right.
Or that just would
yes.
be really helpful for me.
We'd like you to develop an app that's
like
interactive that.
Well ideally.
The app
would
be kind of cool.
Yeah,
all the
and
maps
Apple's
and
cool. Yeah. But. Well, I have been working with Benza.
You want to
put
it
on the same
We need your height.
Here, right?
Just oh, wait a minute. No, that's facilities.
Yeah. Put it on this side. We got a road here. You can, you know, just way it open this week.
Got that? Great.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, not at all.
I lost the train of thought that you were...
Oh, you were going to just do an overview of the... I'm introducing you, Alan.
Oh, okay. All right. Fine. I just didn't know if I was falling into something.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of things going on, and we're going to talk about that. I've got a couple of handouts. One of the things that I wanted to talk about first here was Pickett West, because you guys have heard about this for a long time. And we're at a point where I think it can kind of make a little bit more sense. So this was our Pickett West planning area, and you can see this red outline that goes like this. Voila, okay? And that is this area right in, over in here on the map that you guys are used to looking at. One of the main criticisms that we got was that you have this gigantic planning area. Right, and that was the thing that people were really concerned about. It is a large planning area. However, it is mostly made up of small units and small pieces. What the real issue that I think we had in dealing with this is that where the tan and, you know, the colors that are the units, the white is private ownership. And when we're up, you know, in this part of the world, private ownership is timber companies. When we're over in this part of the world, this is people's backyards, you know. So it is. We were very much in folks' backyards. So that's the overall Pickett West planning area, and we did a lot of work with that. And for us, the major part of the work is analysis, right? What are we? What do we have for timber? What kind of treatments would be appropriate? Those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Oh. So, Timber West planning.
And Alan, I'm just going to interject here. So I've passed out. We have a lot of. So we did kind of a landscape scale environmental assessment of the area, and then below, within that, there are a series of projects that we would be offering as separate timber sales. In the upcoming this year. So that's the list that you have for you in terms of how these things tie together.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So yeah, that's the list of all of these
mm-hmm.
projects. And the first one out the chute was the Pickett Hog Timber Sale. And that's what's up here right now. This
mm-hmm.
is the these are the units that we ended up with. And down in here, this sale has been sold and is under protest. Okay, and the numbers are there and what we've got for acreage and whatnot. We also have Savage
Oak. Under protest, what is it going to be moving forward?
That means that we are current, it is protest. We have basically, there's a couple of steps to it. First protest goes to IBLA, which is the Interior Board, and they will make a ruling on it, and then it will, if it continues to go, will go to litigation, and then the litigation ramps up from there.
So the regulations provide the public an opportunity to formally protest a project. So they submit, in this case, they submitted 200 points that in one of the, what did we receive, 27 different protest letters. One of them had as 200 unique points that they were protesting about the sale.
Just a sale or
yes.
The whole project?
No.
A single sale.
Okay. Right.
So we respond to those protests. And then once we respond to that, then the public, whomever protested, has the opportunity to appeal to the Department of the Interior. And so there is a board of judges, it's called the Interior Board of Land Appeals, that folks can go through for a ruling on that, and then it starts kind of the legal process. So once we address a protest, pending appeal, often after we address a protest, we can award a sale. Sometimes it gets tied up in litigation beyond that. So
the picket hog, how long, if that one's being contested, how long do you anticipate? Is that years? Is that 10 years down the road, or you don't know?
It depends on how far they go with it, because the initial protest and period, there's, you know, you're talking months to a year, something like that. Okay. But if they take it to litigation, then you're on the court schedule, and you know, however long that takes and however mm-hmm. far up they choose to take it.
Who funds them?
They're self-funded through our court system.
They're what?
Never mind.
It's okay. Another subject.
Just curious.
Well, and some of them, we've got, overall in the Medford District, we're dealing with protests and litigation from folks like KS Wild, AFRC. We have a protest that we're dealing with from them. We have the camps who are out by Lake Selmac. So it's different.
Different entities have different issues that
yeah,
they choose.
It can come at us from every side. Not all that long ago, I was dealing with Range in northern Nevada, and one of the guys who had the district, was in the district just across the border from me, put out a grazing, an EA for grazing, and was protested by the person who had the grazing allotment, the watershed people, and the industry folks. All three of them just nailed him. And it's that point where you're kind of saying, all right, well, you must have done something right. You know, nobody's happy with what you did, but that is our process. As much as it'd be nice to have a different process, that is the process we have.
So, you know, it's crazy, just, you know, philosophically, this is what we've been asking you to do for a decade or two,
mm-hmm.
is none of these, we're done with pilots. We've been doing pilots
mm-hmm.
for 20, 30 years. You guys need to do a, what do they call those,
a landscape mm-hmm.
approach to what
mm-hmm.
we've been talking about, application.
Right.
And that's what you're doing. It's
mm-hmm.
just ridiculous that everybody has an opportunity to protest and litigate on these things. Because
wow.
there's the time to do that should have been during the planning process or
mm-hmm.
what have you.
Not
and
after
that's,
it's sold.
That's what 1526, yeah. or not when the agency's trying to apply, what it was approved, you know, this is the scope, now go do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I feel badly that you guys are, you know, and then you get put into a box of like, there's nothing to do, you know. You're going to get protested on everything.
Yeah. We're, you know, working with what we have and working through, you know, my hope is that our new RMP will help us, give us a solid foundation in responding to protests. And we have gained quite a bit of ground in the last year in terms of resolving past protests and getting them moving forward in the process. So it is what it is. It's the regulations. So,
yeah.
Yep.
It's time consuming on the amount
mm-hmm.
of work that we end up doing, but it's you also get on someone else's schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time you're on the court schedule,
yeah.
it is what it is. So, next on our list is Savage Murph, and this is an LSR sale. Which means it's late succession reserve. This will be thinning. These are thinning units. This came out of the work that was done in Pickett West.
Where is that in relation? I'm having trouble. You know.
Over around, actually, east than Murphy, but over in that end of the world.
We had a lot of LSR over there, but it looks like we've got quite a bit.
That's what we've got, but we opted to go through and do this. We've got nice big units. We've got something that we can work with, and then the volumes and whatnot.
What's the objective in a thinning and an LSR?
To keep the units healthy. So we
like
get
a fuels reduction,
yes.
Fire resiliency. I mean,
well, but we're bringing merchantable timber off as well. It's not just that we're going and cutting small stuff. We're cutting big trees.
Is
we're
this a stewardship project?
This is not. No.
Because it's got merchantable timber.
Right.
You can have merchant stewardship, can't you?
You can. It's a different rule set, and it's and this we didn't need it to be a stewardship. We had enough.
How can you do merchant LSR?
You can. The idea is that you're not going after the volume. You're going after these treatments.
Outcome.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're trying to get these on a trajectory where they will be healthy, where they, you know, they're not going to collapse in on themselves. And so, yeah, that's.
So the timber is a byproduct of the.
Mm-hmm.
Does it count to your ASQ?
Yes.
Okay. So. This is probably the most interesting part of this.
That's going to be a challenge.
Actually,
for people,
I take
right?
that back. It doesn't actually. I take that back. It does not. It counts towards volume sold. It, but it doesn't count towards ASQ.
So
volume,
this
volume offered.
Yeah.
This is our clean slate, and that is down in this area here, down right around here, and. This is interesting in that it is the first change for us. We had a record of decision signed in 2016 for our resource management plan, and that provided for a couple of years of finishing out what we were doing before, and our Pickett West project was pre-2016. And we went through that, but one of the things that changed between our old RMP and our new RMP was how we are treating red tree voles. And we had a prescription that basically said if you find red tree voles, then you have to buffer by 10 acres. And we did our analysis on this area. We did find red tree voles. And then we had some folks who came in and did more surveying and found more red tree voles. With the 2016 RMP, we have a different structure for managing tree voles, but what it meant was that we could go and work in this area under the 2016 RMP and be able to work in areas that were precluded by red tree voles prior to
so
that.
So you kept the same project, but you put it under the scoping and auspice
correct.
Of the new RMP.
Right.
Yes.
We took the analysis and rewrote this sale to meet the 2016.
This is the one that I actually was reading about. I remember the riparian areas
mm-hmm.
and setbacks. And road decommissioning, just a little bit of that, isn't there?
We normally do that. We'll,
What's the analysis for doing that? Is there an evaluation of whether or not there are 2477 road in your program?
The decommissioning piece is particularly problematic as you move forward because most of our roads are reciprocal right-of-way roads.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So in order for, you know, it would have to be our road, it would have to be only our road, or we would have to get agreement
from
the other
others,
right-of-way
to use
holders,
a different road.
Which
yeah.
is a
I was looking with the
really
transportation management plan with the Forest Service,
mm-hmm.
and it made a lot of sense in some of the roads that they were planning to decommission that there were parallel elements
mm-hmm.
in all of the ones that they had proposed in their travel management plan where they, travel management, not transportation, that's the
mm-hmm.
next step. Had not been used, you know,
mm-hmm.
in 15 or 20 years. And
yeah.
And so there was, or there was an alternative route. Mm-hmm. So I just wondered, because the 2477 has an element coming from FLIPMA, and that it's being open and accessible and stuff, and it's just one of those things. I just wondered if your agency checks a box to say whether or not it is considered a 2477
road. We do. However, in Western Oregon with the ONC lands, the vast majority are reciprocal rights of way, so they don't necessarily fall under. I don't know what the relationship really is with 2477 there.
Okay.
But we do evaluate what is the purpose of the route, what is, how long has it been there, that kind of thing,
sure,
to ensure that we're not decommissioning something that is
Do you guys get a report at the end of the day, like a one pager or something that says these things have been evaluated and your decision to decommission is based on this information?
The analysis is done in the EA, and it appears in the EA.
Okay.
There's a substantial section.
Right.
But, so, I guess the piece that I wanted to point out to you is that this is the switch. We've gone from our old RMP to our new RMP, that this project is going to use some of the tools that we have in the new RMP, including the 4-acre regen harvest. So we're going to be that skips and gaps that you've been hearing about for so long. That plays out through here, and we're getting pretty substantial volume for the amount of area that we're actually going to be working in.
Until it's protested.
Well,
it's a matter of just being in the process.
The protest is, it's not where it ends. You know, it's just, it is a process that we go through, and we don't lose. We will occasionally make concessions, and we will swap things out, or we will change prescriptions, but eventually it gets done. It's not the end. It's not like it hits protest and we never see it again.
No, it's just delayed for a while.
It's just delayed, yeah.
One of the effects of the delay, though, is your ASQ and what you put up for sale, and anticipating delays, you know, you have to meet your what's offered, or you don't anymore, so you don't have a mandate to meet your ASQ. You've got a, and it was just the question of offering more, understanding that 30% is going to come under protest or evaluation and the delay, and so rather than saying that if you're ASQ for the Medford district is 30-something, you know, it used to be 43.5. You don't put up 43.5, you put up 50.
Yeah.
And you get to 43.5 or 60 and you get to that.
Has
that ever been done?
We would love to do that. We're doing the maximum that we can with the capacity that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And so that has been kind of, given the legal framework surrounding what we need to offer on an annual basis, we're trying desperately to increase our capacity, but we are given the resources that we have, we're really maximizing what we can on an annual basis.
And if you didn't have as many protests, you probably would be able to allocate those resources to maybe increasing
Sure. He'd have the resources to
working,
The level of risk, you know, we certainly work in an environment where, it's kind of a, someone used an analogy of an arms race for information, and I just loved the way they used it, but, you know, we try to put in more information and do more analysis to better withstand protests and to make sure we have a fully informed project, and then the protests come in with more information and more questions about what we put in, and, you know, it's just kind of this never, and it's kind of an ongoing information issue. I'm hopeful that our new RMP will help us to address that and move forward in some areas and say, you know what, we've done a sufficient analysis here.
So that was what I wanted to present about Pickett West and where it is, where it's going, sort of the moving pieces that we have.
Yeah. Do you want to pull the overview map again?
Is that the bottom one?
Yeah. Of course.
Of course.
The bottom one again.
We went through those pretty fast. Are you going to be able to lead those?
What's that?
We went through these pretty fast. Are you going to be able to lead
them? Yeah, that was the plan.
Oh, yep. Great.
So
you can set them in my office if you need or.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
a lot of recognizing that we get lots of feedback from lots of different interests. Things that you will hear and see in the public is that we're doing a 200,000-acre, you know, timber sale project, and it's not. It's a few hundred acres within this several hundred thousand acre watershed boundary. And so that's one of the things that we really try to drive home, and it's been one of our challenges of doing the landscape level analysis that we want to do. And then also, how do we communicate that and reassure people that that doesn't mean that all of this is being harvested at once, kind of a thing. Other aspects as far as where we decide to go, folks are, you know, kind of wonder about that. We basically run a trend analysis on everything that is merchantable and harvestable at any given time. And so that's kind of how we set our parameters and set our units for potential harvest and analysis. So those are a couple of details, but the boundaries do get very large, and you know, recognizing that can make for very challenging conversations and some confusion. We're looking for ways to try to.
What does it mean that you wouldn't include the entire county as a planning area and just kind of dissuade that? How long is the planning area valid for? You know, it could be something of a political element that really I'm not sure, what are you doing outside of the planning area and why aren't you doing something, you know, there? So
well, putting it we have things kind of on a rotation. So we look at, basically our district is divided into 10 watershed areas, and we just kind of rotate our historical forestry patterns, kind of determine where we can go today because of what's been harvested in the past, but we rotate through those to kind of have an orderly process. In terms of a countywide analysis, that would be a challenge.
It would be a full analysis.
Yeah.
We do an evaluation on all of our properties
right.
that are in the teal
mm-hmm.
on not an annual basis, but it's
mm-hmm.
that's our planning area.
Right.
And we are going to propose to put up 8.5 million board feet,
yeah.
whereas I think you're looking at maybe 25.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
we are looking at, we are looking at, in addition to the programmatic or the landscape scale analysis, are there programmatic approaches we could use to be more efficient?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just seems that rather than having that be a distraction to
right.
what you're doing, because you're not,
right.
it's just a planning area.
Right.
And, you know, the numbers, you know,
mm-hmm.
the second sentence tells you that you're not doing
right.
A clear cut on 200,000 acres.
Right.
It's a planning area. It'd be the same
mm-hmm.
thing for us to say that we're not
mm-hmm.
doing a clear cut on 33,000 acres,
mm-hmm.
but it's all in our planning area.
Right.
So it seems like a distraction.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder how effective it is at making that rotation.
Mm-hmm.
On a time frame that you're still meeting within your goals for a watershed. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you're doing treatments on some of these landscapes and you're not getting back to it in 15, 20 years or
right.
more than 10,
mm-hmm.
the efficacy of what you just did may not tie in to what you plan on doing, you know,
mm-hmm.
in a timely fashion where you actually get a substantial landscape watershed.
Mm-hmm.
enhancement.
So
that's my perspective.
Yeah, and keep in mind that we did put this up and then we're putting up what's come out of that work. So
yeah.
it is the larger work that gives you the framework to actually put up sales out of, you know, out of those areas. There's another 11,000 acres of fuels treatments that were part of this effort.
Mm-hmm.
That were part of what we were doing overall in Pickett West. And those will get peeled off over 10 years,
okay,
something like that. You know, those are fuels treatments that have been analyzed. They're shelf stock for us, and as we get funds, we'll look through and say, what do we have for WUI? What do we have that matches
yeah.
up with the direction of the funding?
Right.
And then, you know, work through those. So there's a little more to it than just, you know, a couple of sales and you're gone.
Yeah, so this is a planning area for quite some time.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
And we're looking at how do we become more effective at when we are investing the planning time into an area this large, how do we get the most bang for our buck and get the most out of it in terms of all different types of treatments?
That long-term approach, I hear people saying, you know, you go into a Fools treatment, even if it isn't a WUI, but it's just it's like a hodgepodge.
Mm-hmm.
They don't see how it ties together in the long-term plan.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a real frustration for people who feel like you're just putting Fools dollars out there for what, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you treated 40 acres out in the middle of nowhere or whatever.
Right.
How does that tie into the whole WUI approach of having, you know, like a fire resilient buffer area between the urban-rural interface?
Admit, you just like to say WUI.
I said it too many times probably already.
Aren't you creating your own problem by having such a great big analysis area? Because that's what they're feeding on, that you're going to have 200,000 acres and you're going to log it all. And that's the first thing out of everybody's mouth. Instead of just saying, you know, we're going to take, because you just said, I think you're going to go around and take these one at a time. But just take them one at a time.
It's a balance. It's a balance. There's certainly a trade-off in terms of how big can you go, where do you get the diminishing returns on building your efficiency? And so we do look at smaller projects at times. Given the, as you can see from the kind of green project areas, given the small amount of acreage that we actually have that's harvestable at any given time, we do kind of have to go big. So it's a balance.
When
you don't
have
very much you're actually going to harvest, but
right.
the whole thing's in the analysis arena, and
they're
looking at it like you're going to go in and do the whole thing.
Right.
Only, but they don't understand that most of it is private land in the
right.
in the southern part of that.
Right.
So when we started this, the question was how much area could we cover, and it's so sparse, the land ownership here is so sparse, that you, if you're going to put the effort in, you really just need to deal with this, you know, this chunk. What we had originally laid out was that we would do three separate timber sales. This one right here and pick up a little bit of this. This one here and then this one over here. So we had three, this would be reduced down to three timber sales. In the interim, we got a new RMP with a new rule set, which in some cases, like the Clean Slate, did a really good service for us. So now we can get in and use that in different ways. So it's not only a balancing act overall, it's not even static enough to talk about that balancing act. It changes as you go along, right? So the rule set that we originally laid this out in is not the rule set we're working with. And that's just the
nature of the beast. Is there anything we can do to help your efforts in getting general perspective as opposed to the 27 protesters or the people that show up at your scoping meetings or what have you, that we could get a comprehensive evaluation of the way this community, this planning area feels about this, your work, your efforts? I mean, we've asked eight, nine non-binding questions, you're familiar with these, I think, about different forest management practices, after action, catastrophic wildfire, and we get a pretty definitive position. And I feel like it's helpful. I know that members of Congress have used it from time to time.
Well, I think, that kind of falls into our, you know, consistency analysis with county plans. And so certainly anything that would, that we can include as far as our scoping and analysis comments, we would certainly appreciate.
Okay.
Well, thank you guys for the update.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Actually, if I could just, let me, I've got two other things that I wanted to hand out.
I need two, please.
There's two.
Okay, sorry.
Just as long as she gets
one. There's two for you.
Awesome.
Okay, and that's the other thing that you already, well, there's only three of those. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
So, if you
we'll
hang on to
we'll
that
make,
for a second, and we can walk through the one that I just handed out, because it'll give you kind of a broader view And I'll just go ahead and say the timber sale projects, that's what we've got coming up. This is looking out into 19 and 20 and what we're going to be working on. So
great.
That would represent sales out to 21, somewhere in that neighborhood. The mining plans of operation, the ones that we have going right now, Section 13, that's the Copeland Quarry out by Murphy. That one's signed and done. Stray
what
Dogs.
What is that one about?
That was the Copeland wanted to expand the quarry out onto BLM land, and we went through and did the analysis, and they ended up being able to lease those minerals from us.
Okay.
I think that was the one you were asking me about when we met.
Yeah. I just wondered, it's actually, we owned 11 acres out there.
Yeah, you had one side and we had the other.
Okay.
Yeah.
You've got 80 acres over
yeah,
there.
Yeah, and that's, so. But the actual area available to the quarry expanded considerably over the last 5 years.
Okay.
Partially because of yours, which you guys were able to turn faster.
Yeah.
But ours got completed.
They're burning through what we consider like a 20-year reserve. They'll be done with it in a couple of years, by the end of the year. I mean, they're quite rapidly through it. So the need for aggregate, I think, as the economy improves, is really, you know, we have to keep up, or otherwise we're trucking it from Medford, which doesn't seem environmentally friendly to me to be having.
No, we went through that,
that's
and we
great.
Worked with them, worked with Dogami on what the rehab had to look like and those kinds of things. And
perfect.
Yeah.
That's really positive.
Stray Dog and Four Apples are small mining, individual miners that were working on those plans of operation. Last is the right-of-ways, the Josephine County Walker Mountain Road. Mm-hmm. That is, we're going to have that out here in a couple of months. That one was kind of on again, off again. You guys were on and then off, and then we were on and then off, and it's kind of bounced along.
It's been a mess. I really appreciate you guys'
it's
patience.
Pretty much getting it done.
Good.
And then we've got Mount Baldy Communication Site Expansion, which is a big one of those. The second thing that you were given is just a list of the projects that have been done, the trash pickup. And you can see some of the pictures. I know that this is a big concern with a lot of folks in Josephine County. And I just wanted to give you an idea of what we've been doing. You know, it's not a thankless job, but it's not one that you get a lot of thanks for. But that's give you a sense of kind of the scope of what we've been doing with trash cleanup. And last but not least, we've got the area on Abeg Road that's next to your quarry is now barricaded off. So that piece got done as well.
Thank you. I know the neighbors appreciate.
It's just a disaster. I mean, people taking advantage of public access in the most, the worst possible way. So, and putting the neighborhood in a bad situation, unsafe.
Yeah.
So, I really appreciate your cooperation.
I appreciate Alan. He came to me one day. He's like, "What if we do this?" And I thought, "Yes, we can do that."
We've just been asking. Yeah, we've been asking the wrong question. We were asking the question of how do we stop camping, and I can't. But I can put a barricade up.
Stop parking.
You know, you can still climb over the barricade and go camping, but that's not the problem we had.
No.
You know, the problem we had was the...
it's not real camping. It's
squatting.
Do you ever...
Sort of living.
Do you ever find envelopes and stuff in those things and try to collect for the cleanup?
Occasionally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have a process that we go through. First, the LEs get it, the law enforcement folks, and they'll go through and see if they can identify anything. Or we'll watch for people. We've had a couple of arrests recently that have got some folks who dumped 14 cars on us. Got them going into the courts. But then we go through a round of having hazmat look at it. What do we got? Because sometimes we'll get needles and, you know, those kinds of things. And then we'll go through and figure out how we're going to... how we're going to fund cleaning it up. That's part of the, we've had a bank of Title II funds that we're running through
now. That was a question on the radio this morning. It's, why are all these gates locked? Why can't I go into the mountains again like I used to? This is it.
Part of it.
That's part of it.
Absolutely part of it.
Yep. There's quite a robust conversation on community chat groups on Facebook mm-hmm. about being conscientious of people that are finding themselves in a homeless situation or having to camp mm-hmm. in trailers and such. And it's been neat to see the curve change to say, we're sympathetic to people mm-hmm. needing to be warm and dry.
Right.
We're not sympathetic of them leaving their trash behind.
Right.
And so trying to find that way of saying, how are we being good stewards of our land mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff. So do you guys partner with Solid Waste Agency in any of those? Do you guys partner in, Rob?
We haven't as much lately. We have not had any applications for funding help, but that kind of ties in the discussion we had the other day that we may have an avenue.
Yeah, we have in the past.
Yeah. Once it was Julie Lockman's group, Clean Forest Project.
Yeah.
Once they hung it up, it got tougher to find these opportunities just because we didn't have somebody active.
That buffer in between was kind of tough. And you had asked about our Gates project and getting the mapping done. Elizabeth was able yesterday to sign off on getting somebody on board for us to be able to do that work. That's kind of the piece that we've been waiting on. We've got all the data there.
I thought we were almost there. It just took somebody to make
but
it
But now
pretty.
We just got to get it finished.
It's the, with the turnover that we've had, it's just a challenge. So. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So, before next fire season, I also want us to look at, are there, I know that there was difficulty staffing dispatch and other mm-hmm. things last year, mm-hmm. and so is that something that we, as we're doing emergency planning and preparedness, do we as a county, are we able to assist or train ahead of time? So I just want to keep that conversation mm-hmm. going as well.
Okay, absolutely. Okay.
Now better than later.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Have a good day. Next up, item number 3, Red Cross involvement in Josephine County, Carissa Hetrick. Did I get that right?
Hedrick.
She came down from Eugene early this morning. Thanks for patiently waiting for us.
it's my usual route, but I just wanted to have an opportunity to meet you all, and mm-hmm. thank you for putting me onto the agenda. We had met up in Eugene at a Rotary meeting. I think you were up there for some conference. And
AOC, and I stayed for Rotary.
Yeah, so. Good little plug. Yeah. I actually attended one of your Rotary meetings down here a couple months ago as well. So the Red Cross, inside your packet, there's a map of kind of what we call our Cascades area, which is all of Oregon and then parts of Southwest Washington. And so the Red Cross is a nonprofit organization. People oftentimes think of us as a quasi-governmental just because we are involved with disaster response, mostly in regards to home fires and, of course, on the larger scale with forest fires and hurricanes and mudslides and other things. But we are, we have 5 lines of service. Many people aren't aware of that. We got the disaster services, health and safety, blood services, services to the armed forces, and international. And in Josephine County, we have a core of volunteers that are trained in what we call disaster action teams. And we are notified, Red Cross is notified of home fires through the fire chiefs. And so they'll call a hotline number, and then the hotline number will route it to, and this is a hotline number for our state. And then those calls will be routed to the volunteers that are on call for Josephine County. And then we're required to show up within at least, at most 2 hours. Usually our response time is 30, 40, 60 minutes. And what's unique about Red Cross is that our volunteers actually show up at the residence, like at the curb. And we meet with the families and we provide them the basic assistance. So a client assistance card is uploaded with funds depending on what their needs are, as well as how many families were affected. And we are able to give them basic assistance. So if your house burns down, you're displaced by a flood, you know, you're going to think, where am I going to sleep tonight? What am I going to eat? What am I going to wear? Especially if you have to, like, split and run, you know, if it's a wildfire. And so we are able to provide the clients with that assistance and then also with follow-up casework to get them triaged with 211 and other local resources. So we're a bridge over the river. We're not long-term recovery, but we are basic 2 to 3 day holdover, plus we help guide. When it comes to like larger disasters, as I know that there have been several ice storms that we were involved in up in Cave Junction about I think the last, not this winter, but the last two winters have been kind of some shelters that were set up there. The wildfires that were coming over from Chetco, I know it bled over into Josephine County.
We worked with Brian Anderson very closely. He did a great job.
Yeah, Brian's a great volunteer. So he's our key government liaison for Josephine County. So working with that, we have a disaster program manager. So the way that it's structured down here is the disaster program manager works out of Medford office but covers six counties in Southern Oregon. So it's Lake, Klamath, Jackson, Josephine, Coos, and Curry are those, hopefully I counted six or seven, probably six. And they are the go-to for anything disaster related. My job as the executive director is to kind of be the face of the Red Cross for all lines of service. So I help engage and communicate with the government leaders. I'm working actually with your counterparts in other counties. There's Will Tucker. I don't know if you would know him in Linn County. He's actually on our board, board of directors for the chapter. And then I'm also working with another commissioner in Benton County in identifying board members. So it's always good to have open lines of communication so you kind of know what we can do. It's good working with Brian and the DPM for things disaster related because I would just kind of refer you down there. But if there were any hiccups or anything that I could help with, and just always, I'd rather know than not know, just to help kind of help assist in that area. Blood services is also a really key area. We have a fixed site, like a donor center in Medford. And we also have mobile drives. So they usually have like 2 days a week, they host drives in Medford, but then the blood bus kind of travels around either by blood bus or by fixed or like mobile sites where we can set up inside of a church or a school. High schools collect anywhere from like 50, 75 to 100 units, kind of depending on how big the school is. 20% of the nation's blood supply comes from kids between 16 and 24.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. So we want to
I knew some that donated plasma to get money for college, but...
Yeah.
Vampire Liberty.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's... So we manage 40% of the nation's blood supply.
Wow.
Which is a lion's share compared to all the other groups across the country that have percentages, but nothing comparable to, you know, anywhere close.
On the blood things, when do you test for drugs when you before
oh,
you...
yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're the all blood collection groups are managed by the FDA standard. So those 40 questions that everyone has to answer to, even though you're a 100 unit donor, those are required by the FDA. And so, of course, we want people to voluntarily donate and answer all their questions, but then, of course, we also test. And one of the three national testing labs happens to be in Portland. So all the blood from the West Coast all gets sent to Portland, it gets tested, and then it gets sent back out to the contracts with the hospitals.
With Measure 91 and marijuana legalized in Oregon, is marijuana one of the things you test for?
I can't say for certain.
Okay, I was just wondering if there was a, if there was an
They
impact.
Actually add it as a healing as a, component.
Yeah,
no, I'm just kidding.
I
calm you down.
I couldn't answer, I just don't know.
I just didn't know, you know, because as marijuana came in, there's just a lot more people with it in their bloodstream, and if it's something, does it affect your ability to get as much blood as you need?
Well, the higher risk is going to be heroin and meth use, which would have intravenous, you know, IV use, so it's not IV use, needles. And so that's...
But if you test positive, if you draw the blood out, the only way your body is what cleans the marijuana out of the blood system after a period of time, but if you draw it out, it's there till you pass it on to Rob. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why the Red Cross, we collect blood as well as other groups voluntarily, so that there is no component that's like, I'll get $15 for a pint of blood, because that way you encourage people that might not be so honest in the blood donation.
Yeah.
But I can push the question up and find out, because, I mean, marijuana is legal. It'd be good to know myself.
They don't test me for my thyroid medication if I give, you know, but they do ask about anemia. And so it's just kind of one of those things that, they ask if you have the flu when you're giving and other symptoms, so I don't know, it is interesting.
Yep.
Okay.
So one of the, so right now in the month of January, we are always in a state of appeal. It's kind of like clockwork, summer months, January, it's always like that, which means that we have an urgent need for blood. And it is where we are, in large part because of all the winter storms that happened on the East Coast, there was a time when they could not collect 5,000 units of blood, which means that other parts of the country have to make up that difference because the hospitals on the East Coast still have surgeries, still have car accidents, still have cancer patients and preemies and burn victims that require blood. So it's always educating the public that the need is constant all the time. There are more critical times of the year. In the summertime, because of the high school blood drives, kids aren't in school, they aren't donating blood. And so we want them to donate at least once over the summertime, and people are on vacation, it's hard to schedule it in. And so you can donate every 56 days, which is every 2 months. So we really want to have not just one time a year or once every 3 years you donate blood, but make it a steady part so we have a regular steady stream of blood. And the really cool thing, I donated in December and my blood got tested, and like 3 weeks later I got an email and it said that my unit of blood was actually sent to Grants Pass. No kidding. So it said, just like, your blood was sent to this hospital in Grants Pass. I'm like, oh, that's cool. So that's it cool tells story. You. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of neat. So one time it got sent to West Virginia, but one time it got sent to here. So they just divide it up. The related to services to the armed forces, that's our original line of service, and I share that for families that you know who have members in the service. Let's say mom and dad live in Grants Pass, son's in Korea, dad has a heart attack, he's in the hospital. Mom just can't call the son up in Korea and say, hey honey, come home. The command is like, we need the information verified. So the mom calls the Red Cross, we call the hospital, speak to the attending nurse and physician. We get the diagnosis, ask if the service member is recommended to come home, and then we relay that onto the command. And then once the command knows that the Red Cross verified it as neutral and independent, then they say, okay, go home. So that is our number one service that we do for the military. People aren't aware of that. And when it comes to military bases, it's the Red Cross and the OSU. Sorry, not OSU, the USO. USO. I got them all mixed up. Are the only two outside agencies from apart from the military that are able to be on bases because of this long-standing history. Of course, Clear Barton, into the battlefield. So the way that we're kind of designed is kind of Portland is like the headquarters for our region, which is Oregon and parts of Southwest Washington. And then the community chapters is one in Bend, Eugene, where I live and work from, and then Vancouver, Washington. And so we are the chapter areas, and we cover, I cover 10 counties in Southwest Oregon. So really my job is to, you know, meet with the local government officials, let you know what we do. As I said, please, I'll give you my card. You know, if there's anything that, you know, whether I can answer it or I refer you on to blood or disaster or whatever it might be, that's one of my roles. And then also looking for new areas for like blood drives, because it is such a steady need. I'm taking more upon myself to organize and set up blood drives. I'm pretty sure all the high schools are with Red Cross, and generally
doesn't the churches make sense to me? I mean, mm-hmm. You just get out of a sermon for an hour about giving to your fellow man, least among you, blah blah blah, and you just, not in a condescending way, blah blah blah, but
right.
On your way out of town, on your way out of the service, just drop the five on the plate and go give a couple liters or whatever.
Yeah, it's a little, the way our blood is set up mostly is that when we do set up public blood drives, it's usually a 5-hour window.
Yeah.
Because it takes
a lot of time.
20 to 40 units, kind of depending on how big it might be. Generally, they're Monday through Fridays with the occasional Saturdays, but we don't, I wish we could really set up on Sundays, but it just is a logistical staffing and blood. I mean, we plan our calendars out 3 to 6 months. So we've got our blood appointments set up for that period of time. So it's maneuvering resources and when do we go to the coast and when do we go to Klamath? And it's a logistical monster. But Yeah, but churches, they do take on blood drives. They do either host it as a community drive, or they get their members to sign up for appointments, absolutely. Okay. And you can sign up ahead of time. The other really cool thing that we have is called Rapid Pass, where the day of your scheduled blood donation, if you are scheduled to go in at 10 o'clock, you get an email that day, and you can answer all 40 of your questions at the office.
Perfect.
Before you go in and wait in line and look through the book and answer your questions. So it's called Rapid Pass. So you have to do it the day of. You can't do it the day prior, it just because legality's sake. So that's a really cool feature.
Okay.
So
I know that as Secretary of State Richardson sent out an email last week about preparedness and included a lot of American Red Cross links for individuals and helping with homes and such. With the Medford office and disaster response, is there much education in communities about preparedness? I know you can go on the Red Cross site and buy packs and various things. I was looking at one of the little crank solar, you know, charger kind of things and weather radios, but the other thing we've been looking at also is trying to see about getting grants for AED placements throughout county buildings and such.
Absolutely.
Is that something that you guys ever do grant for those kinds of things, or would it be?
We don't offer grants for AEDs. However, we do sell AEDs.
Okay.
And it is a really critical part of life-saving, because for every minute that you delay in applying an AED, lessens the chance of survival by 10%. So if you wait 5 minutes, 50% less survival rating. So, and it also can take a fire truck 5 minutes to get here, an ambulance 12 minutes on average, you know. So, yeah, having AEDs in public places is highly recommended. And especially working, you know, in even office, like, you know, even downtown, if people knew where one was, that way the merchants could get to it and have that education piece. We also do, like, preparedness trainings. We've gone to, I mean, churches have invited us in. It's something that we just have to schedule in advance, and then our volunteers, as we're able to, get them scheduled to come out. Another thing I do want to share with you as well is we have what's called a home fire campaign, and in the packet, there is, we install free smoke alarms, and we've been doing it for 3 years. And across the country, it's a national initiative, because we respond to a lot of home fires and, like, let's start preventing home fires through this education. So anyone can call that hotline number and request a smoke alarm. So the person would, like, leave. It's a message intake, but then we also are very active in answering the messages and routing it to the county where it's assigned to. And then our volunteers go around on strike teams, as we call it, in pairs of two or three, and they have scheduled appointments. So we'll call the people ahead of time. It's like, hey, we've got some volunteers. They're going to be home on Tuesday between 10 and 12. And we make a note, and those volunteers go to the address. It takes about 20 minutes per appointment. We can install anywhere from 1 to 4 alarms kind of per house. Usually we hit all the bedrooms, the hallway, the living room, the upstairs, the downstairs. And
great service.
It's awesome.
We get 2 calls on average a day in this region.
Really?
What the stats said.
Yeah. Oh, for home fires, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
crazy.
So we respond, about two to three, depending on the season, averaging it all out for home fires. And so with the smoke alarms, a lot of it is preventable. It's cooking fires, it's space heater education, it's plugging too many outlets in. And then we also give them that prepare book, the guide, which really is a great guide. And it also goes through how to build your disaster kit. You know, it has check marks so you can actually work through the list. A lot of these items you already have. And personally speaking, I became educated when I started here in the Red Cross in Oregon about Cascadia and what a scary thing it is. And so for Christmas last year, instead of Christmas presents, I put on my Amazon wish list preparedness items, because we all have enough purses and shoes. We need hand crank radios.
Dan needs more.
Yes, purses and shoes go with everything.
Well, really appreciate your passion about Red Cross. Thank you so much for coming and visiting.
Yeah, sorry, I have a way to ramble on a little bit, we just want to
appreciate you, your
you
patience
here.
And waiting.
No,
okay.
All is well. Don't be strangers.
Thank you.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, approximately, do you have a...
No,
time?
Reschedule it. I'm not here, and I'd like to hear it, so.
Okay.
It's so important that we look at these agendas. There was no way that, that was, Alan Buschweiler could have spent, you know, he spent a half an hour on the subject.
Yeah.
So we'll just, this is an important subject and you've cut.
So can we reschedule you for, I hate to say.
Sorry to make you sit here for 2 hours.
Yeah. Only an hour.
Or 1 hour.
Yeah, we come back.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so anything from other? You're all set?
No. See you at 2.
Commissioner Morgan?
That's fine.
You're fine? Okay, we are adjourned at 12 o'clock, and we will see you at 2 o'clock for legal counsel update.